Boston at 10:07.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's really not too much for a parent to ask. To ask for some good, hard information about helping a child. But when it comes to the diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, parents still aren't getting the help they want. There is no blood test or brain scan that draws a clinical line that shows the mothers and fathers that Junior needs help, that he might need drugs. And so Ritalin remains a fierce point of debate over how to raise, how to teach, and how to medicate children. Now there are more drugs available, Adderall, Concerta, Metadate, and the debate has widened to include preschoolers, three-year-olds, and whether they should be getting behavior-altering psychostimulants to make it through the daycare day. The National Institute of Mental Health is doing a comprehensive study trying to provide some answers. Connection listeners, who do you listen to? Do you think we're any closer to an understanding of what happens when we medicate children like this? There are the horror stories and the success stories, but the FDA has only approved these drugs for children 6 and older. What about the younger ones? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, and we will talk in a moment with doctors who are opinion leaders in this debate. But first we'll go to Cheryl Gay Stolberg. She's a medical writer with the New York Times. She has a piece in this coming Sunday Times magazine about giving preschool meds. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Tell me, the story that you're covering is not a new one, the controversy over giving stimulants to kids, but what's new here is that the kids themselves seem to be getting younger and younger.
That's true. Doctors are increasingly prescribing Ritalin and other medications for hyperactivity to children under age 6, to preschoolers.
How do they do that if the FDA doesn't allow it for kids under 6?
Well, doctors can actually prescribe any drug that is approved for any reason. The FDA imposes rules about labeling medications, and so companies can only advertise these medications for the approved uses. But a doctor has the prescribing authority to write prescriptions for whatever he or she sees fit. And so they can do it, quote-unquote, off-label.
Now, the study itself also raises some interesting questions because of the way it's being done, in that they have also included something about altering behavior of the kids and of the parents instead of just going straight to the medication, right?
That's right. Well, the National Institute of Mental Health was extremely sensitive to the controversy around the idea of giving Ritalin to very young children, children ages 3 to 5.5. And so the Institute imposed a parent training requirement, insisting that any child who enters the study, his parents or her parents must first undergo 10 weeks of parent training, which is, in essence, a classroom instruction in behavior therapy to try to improve the child without medication. And then if that fails, the child then can be enrolled into the medication phase of the study.
Now, you focused on one small boy, Sam, 4 years old, right?
Right.
Tell me a bit about him.
Well, I actually picked Sam after meeting with quite a number of families who are enrolled in this study. And Sam is a little boy who, like all four-year-old boys, is rambunctious and active. He loves everything that moves. He loves trucks and planes and trains. And he was getting into a lot of fights. He was a behavior problem in his preschool, and that's where his parents first started to think that something might be wrong. They always knew they had a very active and exhausting little boy, but it wasn't until he got to preschool and he actually raised his fists to the teacher that the parents decided they needed to have him evaluated for hyperactivity, and that's what they did.
And did you go into this as a reporter with any preconceived notion, Cheryl? You're a mother as well. I mean, you'd obviously thought about this in personal terms as well as just as a reporter, no?
I am a mother, but I really can say that I went into this with an extremely open mind. There's an intense controversy, in fact, over whether or not the diagnosis of ADHD even exists. And I really tried to clear my mind and keep an open mind. And as I met with a lot of the families in this study, I found myself a little bit conflicted about whether kids this young really needed medication, or perhaps there was some other factor, something going on in the home or something in the school that was causing these behavior problems. But frankly, when I met Sam, I really became convinced that this is a real disorder, that there are kids out there who need help. This family had done everything they possibly could for this child, and I could even see in Sam that he wanted to behave. He's a darling little boy, and he tried so hard, and yet there were times when he just couldn't help himself.
Cheryl, stay with us. I want to bring the doctors into the conversation. We have standing by with us Dr. Timothy Willens. He's a psychiatrist and a psychopharmacologist at Mass General Hospital. He's written a book called Straight Talk About Psychiatric Medications for Kids. Dr. Lawrence Diller is also with us. He practices behavioral development pediatrics in Walnut Creek, California. His recent book is Should I Medicate My Child? Sane Solutions for Troubled Kids with and Without Psychiatric Drugs. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I understand that you will both and have both prescribed Ritalin for kids, but you have quite different perspectives on it. So why don't you just tell me what your opening comment is to a parent who comes looking for advice. Tim Willens, do you want to start? What's the first thing that you'll say to a parent who's looking for advice?
Well, I think, first of all, there's two issues on the table. One is, does the disorder exist in preschoolers? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes from the scientific literature. And then number two is, in terms of treatment, where does medications fall in the algorithm, or where would you sequence medicines in the treatment? And I would recommend to parents to have a thorough understanding of what's going on, and that would include family-based disturbances that may be translated into the child, or basic problems that the child may have that may be transmitted into the family. Once we figure out what's wrong, it's a process. Once you examine what's wrong, you have the diagnosis, then we would talk about treatment, and that would start with, for younger kids, non-pharmacologic, things that you're hearing already,
right,
behavioral modification, parent training, and then pharmacologic intervention.
Dr. Diller, anything different in what you'd say to parents first off?
Well, I'm thinking more of the case that Cheryl talked about, and I think at times we compare apples and oranges, and where is the line? So, I mean, there are kids who are clearly being driven by biological factors, and it really doesn't even take a doctor to tell something's clearly off, and Cheryl could see that. The trouble is idea of, chemical imbalance has become so common at this point that children deviating, at least in my experience, even just slightly from expected norms, the preschool teacher is already whispering, maybe he has some kind of chemical problem. And many of these children are simply just more intense and more persistent than the average 3-, 4-, or 5-year-old. And so it's a question of spectrum here. And in my practice, which is a more suburban, a middle, upper middle class practice, the sensitivity toward, is this a brain disorder starts. I talk about, the Tom Sawyers and Pippi Longstockings who show up in my office. So I don't want to discount this problem at all, but I want to say immediately, let's not automatically think that this is a lifelong disorder that requires medication.
So I need a little bit more help between the two doctors.
Well, I think first of all, I think it's important to distinguish what's on a spectrum. What I'm talking about is not spectral. It certainly falls on a spectrum, such as a cough is a spectrum to pneumonia, but at some threshold, you pass some threshold, it becomes very significant behaviors that necessitate some form of treatment. And with ADHD, it's well delineated. We're not talking about just a bad hair day. What we're talking about are consistent, pervasive patterns in children's lives that are leading to some serious outcomes. A child who has remarkable hyperactivity, for example, will follow a ball into the street without looking for a car. That's a bad outcome. These kids take their seatbelts off in moving cars. They try to get out of moving cars. They assault other kids. They go after their parents. They are unable to learn. They're often held back, even in kindergarten and first grade. We're talking about preschoolers, because they're not learning. They're not able to pay attention.
Tim, is this 1 in 10, 1 in 1,000 kids that you're talking about
here? We're still talking about probably, the rates. We don't know the rates of preschool ADHD, but in general, by 7 years of age, you're talking somewhere between 3 to 8%. The other comment I want to make about preschoolers when we talk about ADHD and treatment is that all of our data show that the onset of ADHD is in preschool years. So the notion that preschoolers have ADHD is not a new notion. We've known that for many years. The issue is that we're starting now to say, why should we let people live for 3 or 4 years with this disorder, get into trouble, have serious morbidity, be 3 to 4 years behind before we start to address it or treat it, but realize that the onset of ADHD, the mean onset of ADHD, full criteria for ADHD is 3 years of age. That puts you solidly in preschool years.
I'd like to jump in here by saying that one of the central questions raised in this clinical trial, though, is how will the results of this trial be used in the general population? The kids in this study are very strictly evaluated, and kids who see the two doctors who are on the call with us also will be strictly evaluated and carefully monitored. But out there in the community, not all children are being seen by ADHD experts, and pediatricians are prescribing these drugs often without proper guidance. So the question is, if we study these young preschoolers and then publish the results, will doctors out there in the country take this as a license to medicate the very youngest children? And we already know that ADHD is often improperly diagnosed, and it's often improperly treated, and it's especially difficult to diagnose in a young child who is supposed to be hyperactive and impulsive. So I think the dilemma of this study is how will the results be used?
And is it your sense from the people that you spoke to in researching the story, Cheryl, that in fact that is exactly what could happen, that if the National Institute of Mental Health study concludes that they can't find any reason not to medicate a three-year-old, that there will be a greater increase than we're seeing today?
Well, that's a concern. And another concern about this study is that the behavioral therapy that is offered for the parents or the parent training is 10 weeks of classroom instruction. There are other programs out there that are more intensive, and some experts say that they've had great success at avoiding medication in as many as 3/4 of young children who are go through perhaps summer camp for hyperactive kids or whose teachers go through intensive training.
Those are a lot more expensive, though, aren't
they? They are more expensive. And so the question is, what does society owe to these young children? What do we owe it to them to provide extensive and expensive therapy in advance of medication, or do we take, in essence, the cheap way out and give them a medicine which may be kind of a quick fix?
Well, first of all, I would note that, you know, studying the use of medications in context to a disorder is a good thing in terms of it's already occurring, and we need to know systematically what are the benefits and what are the cons of doing such a thing. So I think the idea that studying it is going to create more of a problem, I find confusing. I would argue that in terms of the sequencing, what's important from this study is that the sequencing is starting with non-pharmacologic, starting with behavioral treatments first and parent training, and then going to medication. And that's typically what's occurring in preschoolers. That is the solid message that our field has. That will be a solid message that comes from this study by the design of the study. The other issue is that when the NIMH will present these results, they're very careful about making those points. They don't want people to rush right into some type of a premature outcome.
Dr. Willens, I want to stop you there and take this moment to thank Cheryl Stolberg for being with us. Thanks, Cheryl.
My pleasure.
Cheryl's piece, Preschool Meds, will be in this Sunday New York Times Magazine. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. When we come back, are we taking a cheap way out? Does society owe more to these kids that Cheryl's writing about that the two doctors we're talking to today are looking at? Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Walk into your book club, sit down with a group of friends, say one word, Ritalin, and you've got a conversation going because everybody's got anecdotes, everybody's got stories, everybody knows friends whose children are taking it, who has friends whose children were told to take it and didn't, and they were successes and failures. Certainly all the lack of the ability to zero in on exactly what attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a large part of it. But as we move faster and farther towards different medications that are available to treat the symptoms of this, people are being drawn in one direction and another, trying to decide whether or not it's right for their child. The National Institute of Mental Health is currently doing a study looking at whether or not it is right to give drugs like this to preschoolers, 3, 4, 5-year-olds. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We invite you in on the conversation. Dr. Lawrence Diller, there's one of the things that that Cheryl noted about the study, which I found interesting, was the fact that in doing the behavioral training that went along with the option to move to drugs, a lot of the parents in the study, I understand, said, thanks for the behavioral training. We're not going to stick around for drugs. We think we've got the problem licked now.
Yeah, I actually read Cheryl's article yesterday, and I actually didn't see that section there. And it was actually another reporter following this story who alerted me to this, and I called Larry Greenhill, who is the head of this multi-site study, and I asked him, you know, Larry, I've been hearing that you've been having trouble keeping children and families in this study into the medication arm, the medication arm being this part where they compare Ritalin versus placebo on the children's behavior. And Larry is a very sensible and cautious man, and among the things he said, he felt it was almost morally imperative that they first offer the children and their families a behavioral component, and maybe we'll come back to that in a moment. But what they were finding, and he says that the ratio is changing here and there a little bit, but nearly 50% of the families who get the behavioral training, which was actually criticized as not being as much as can be given,
right,
nearly 50% of the families are refusing to go into the medication arm of the study. The parents are saying, we are feeling okay about this problem right now. The doctors actually then look at the children and say the children haven't changed that much. But apparently the parents, being given appropriate tools for dealing with these kinds of personalities, are feeling much more empowered and much more in control of their children, and they don't want to give their kids meds then. And the study is going to have to get a little bit more money, apparently, to recruit more families so they can finish the medication arm. I think this is extremely important information for families thinking about what to do about their 3-year-old children or 5-year-olds or even 8 or 9-year-olds, because finding somebody who can work with the parents intensively, not for months and years, but for a couple of weeks intensively, and developing strategies, particularly for that child and family, is actually not that easy to find, and it does cost more money. And again, this notion of access and cost leads to people winding up on pills.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Take our first call from Anne, who's in Boston. Hi, Anne.
Yes, hi. I have direct experience with this because we went through this with my child as a 3-year-old who was, as they say, acting up in preschool. And they were suggesting that he had the ADHD, and we looked into it. We chose not to go with medication at that time and went instead to behavioral techniques, which worked remarkably well. I will say he was not an extreme case. He was a moderate case. But what we ended up with was a happy, creative child.
Can I stop you for just half a second? And we keep talking about behavioral techniques. Give me an example of what you changed that made your son an easier kid in the preschool.
Okay. The big issues are when they're very active, following directions, impulsiveness, and what they call transition time, going from putting the blocks down to going to the bathroom, putting the coat on, and getting ready to leave the house. And what you find is you do a countdown, and you say, we're leaving in a few minutes. And you may even have a little clock out there in the playroom that you point to the time and say, this is when we're leaving. Clock says now is time to put the coat on. And you make the transition period take a little bit longer than with maybe a different child who doesn't have this problem, in which you just say time to go, and they put things down and go. The real issue, I think, for parents to think about is, what kind of preschool are you choosing? Do they understand this? Do they view this as aberrant behavior? Are they trying to force the child into narrow confines of time with quick transitions and a lot of pressure? Because that is disastrous. The other thing I would say is...
Let me, if I can, Ann, take that point and ask Dr. Willens on it, because, Tim, my wife is a teacher and an elementary school teacher, and this is a big dilemma for them, because the parents might say, I think my child should be medicated, or the other parents are saying, that kid's acting up, why don't you get him on drugs, slow him down so my kids can learn?
Right, well, it what's remarkable is that some of the information we have from different sites that study preschoolers it really compounds the story by really supporting what Anne is saying, that, in fact, there's a lot of variability by the type of preschool, and there's a lot of inconsistencies by what the parents see and what the preschool is saying.
So what do you tell the parents to look for?
What I tell them to look for is pervasive, both in the preschool and in the home setting. What are they seeing? Usually when ADHD is operant in preschoolers where it's problematic, you see it occurring everywhere, in the car, in the home, in the preschool, and it's a problem in most different sites. And then I also ask them to talk to a very experienced preschool teacher, somebody who has many gray hairs or many years under their belt, to give them a better context in which the child is acting up. And then, remember, it just starts the process to look at ADHD and to entertain the diagnosis, and part of that is the proper diagnosis. You don't just jump and say you have right. ADHD because of that.
Yeah. And in your particular case, was there already an aversion on your part about giving drugs to your son?
Oh, absolutely. And we were completely negative about it and didn't want any part of that and wanted to find alternative solutions, which we did do with support from the teachers. And I also will say this, and I would say this to the parents, I can't stress enough how much important it is for the whole family to slow down, because it seems as though this is so exacerbated with a young child when the pace of the family life is frenetic.
Yeah, it's one thing that everybody comments on. You've got both parents working, some perhaps at more than one job. Kids are latchkey kids. It's harder for them to learn the sort of behavior. It's a big part of the story. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Anne, thanks for your call.
Dick,
can I say something? Dr. Diller here?
Sure.
Okay, just this notion of the behavioral treatments, and she talked about transitioning time, this notion generally of less talk and more immediacy of action, rewards and punishments. This is going to be very, very helpful, again, with the intense and persistent child. I think that the notion that 50% of the parents are opting out of the study and the fact that they feel okay about their children raises some very, very important points overall about the nature of this ADHD diagnosis. It's felt by people like Tim that this is a biological genetic diagnosis that really is at conception, and that parenting really doesn't matter that much. So here we have a study where these children are being very, very carefully screened. These are the kids that the best doctors think have ADHD. It's going to be very interesting 3 to 5 years from now, when these kids are in first, second, and third grade, to see whether these children who were picked as ADHD kids still show significant symptoms if their parents have learned how to deal with this kind of personality. Because if indeed that's the case, it knocks the entire foundation of this notion of the immovability of this condition. And I'm not, again, challenging Tim on the notion there are certain kids, a small minority maybe, of the children that we are treating with Ritalin, who I don't care what environment they're in, what kind of treatment they're getting from their parents. The parents shouldn't be blamed for this. They will have problems everywhere all the time. Let's use medication judiciously there.
Tim, briefly,
the way we're using medication in our country, in the real world, Tim, not at your place, but in the real world, is we're giving it to the Tom Sawyers and the Pippi Longstockings.
Tim, I would disagree, and I'd also like to clarify something. When you're making comments that parenting is, the cause, parenting is independent of ADHD, it's not the case. What we're commenting on is that there's a strong familiarity and heritability of ADHD. 80% of cases are probably have some genetic contribution. That parenting has a huge effect on how the child grows up, their personalities, etc. But it isn't parenting that causes a disorder. It can make the behavioral manifestations better or worse based on how the parent responds to the child. But that, again, information shows that these kids by 3 years of age have the disorder. And while it would be nice to assume that parenting will ameliorate all the symptoms, it doesn't. And again, the field strongly believes that children should have behavioral modification and parent training, and you should work with the kids not using medicines first. And it's great that you're being able to manage half of the kids without medications. I would hope it would be three quarters or more.
Right.
But for that other half, you're going to need to do something. And that's what we're talking about, the use of meds, and that's what that study's about. And by the way, there are 7 controlled trials of using stimulants in preschoolers. This isn't the first trial. And those studies have shown that it works, it's helpful, and it improves the family interactions and family dynamics.
Let's go back to the calls if we can. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Kirsten's calling in from Exeter, New Hampshire. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I've been doing behavioral therapy with my son for 4 years. He's 6 years old now. I just put him on Adderall this weekend. I've been doing training, behavioral therapy and training directly and indirectly with MSW, psychologists, OTs, and I'm a parent who's loath to put my child on medication. I've avoided it as long as I can. I leaned towards waiting till he was six, till he got into school, mm-hmm. and he was really being affected in the learning arena.
Adderall, let me just point out for our listeners, Kirsten is one of the newer versions of Ritalin. What was it that made you decide that the behavioral work wasn't going to be enough?
Like I said, when he went into first grade, that was when I was really waiting to see is what the teacher said, how he was behaving in school, how he was absorbing what he needed to learn or not. And if his behavior got any worse in that first grade setting, which is a lot more demanding on a child than a preschool setting.
Right.
But I'm a firm believer with Anne and all your guests here that behavioral therapy absolutely has to be tried. But from 3 to 6 years old, what needs to also be assessed year to year, I think, is the consideration of what the effect of problems in preschool has on the child. Their self-esteem, this is when they're developing their social skills, and the child starts developing an image of themselves. And if they're always seen as the bad kid, year to year, that can really either make things worse or when they get into first grade, can just kind of explode.
Kirsten, let me ask you what the if this is the first week that your son's been on Adderall, what you noticed, what you saw?
Wow, the first day was amazing in terms of he was very emotionally all over the place. It got better as the days went on. He was hyper-focusing on things which he isn't really able to do, and when he couldn't do something, he got very frustrated. So I think, you know, I think that you're going to see a medley of responses, but I don't think he's far enough into the treatment to really know how it's going to help him. And I also see some anxiety that that he normally has, but I think because it's changing, his body chemistry is changing, that's causing him to be a bit more anxious.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. So, Kirsten, when you look ahead at what what's next for you and for your son, do you have in your mind that, you know, maybe a year, maybe two, stay with it as long as it's helpful? How do you look into the future?
Well, I guess now that I've given in to trying the medication, I'm going to try whatever they suggest I try. If I have to change, I'll change. I think he is desperate to be a good kid. Like I heard, I think she talked about Sam, Cheryl talked about Sam. He wants to be a good kid. When he hits a kid, he gets in trouble and he cries and says, you know, basically is saying, I don't want to be a bad kid. And his esteem and his frustration is getting worse. And I think the teachers see that he's getting his image of himself is being created and not in a good way.
Dr. Larry Diller sounds like one of these cases where you might have also prescribed some sort of psychostimulant.
Yeah, this is because I get into sound bites or I have debates with Tim that people think I'm against medication. I've been prescribing stimulants for 25 years. You know, I think this lady has gone the route and is trying. The child is in first grade. And I think it's a sensible thing to use a trial. Now, the thing with stimulants, Adderall and Ritalin, they have the same effect on everybody, and people don't understand this. A child or adult, ADHD or not, these medications allow people to stick with things they find boring and difficult.
What are you saying? I'd be better at my job if I took Ritalin?
You would. It makes normal people's performance super normal. Now, why doesn't everybody take Ritalin then? Well, there's two reasons. Most of us meet the needs we have to do in our jobs and stuff, and in that sense, children are more locked into a much more rigid job demand. They don't have any choice. Actually, the other reason why has little to do with the children, but is the bugaboo that frightens parents, we might as well clear this up, is that in adults, at least, there's a significant risk of abuse, and this has happened in the past, which is why we don't willy-nilly prescribe stimulants to teens and adults. But let me reassure parents here, and I'm sure Tim would agree, that this issue of abuse is not an issue in the preteen at all, and so that the notion of if you've tried a lot of things and the kid is still struggling, by all means, it's sensible. My problem is when we skip steps or we have inadequate treatment or unavailable treatment, and there's the pill looming, and it's relatively cheaper and available.
Right.
That's what bothers me.
Dr. Willens, I have a friend across the river at Harvard who talks to kids there, and there's quite a black market in Ritalin there, kids who use it just to get stoned, other kids who use it to focus on their studies, and I would guess we could say that this is perhaps the first generation of university-age kids who may have got their first prescription while they were younger. Is this something that we need to worry about?
The whole issue of abuse, I mean, first of all, you have to put it in context, too. There are certainly case-by-case issues, and these are same individuals who abuse glue and whiteout and anything else that's available. But if you look systematically at it, since we were talking about that, we have a paper coming out in pediatrics. It's a very important issue. When you look at the world's literature, it turns out that ADHD untreated, leads you to twice the risk for substance abuse. Almost half of adults, for example, with ADHD have a substance problem. Treating ADHD with stimulant medications across the lifespan reduces that in half, cuts the risk for substance abuse in half. That's a huge, huge effect of medication on treating it. And I want to comment a little bit on this Kristen's case. I just saw a patient yesterday who has a 5-year-old who was treated with Concerta, the lowest dose of Concerta. And the mother summed it up to me with tears in her eyes. She says, you know, she goes, I've always loved my child, but now that he's treated, I really like him and I really like to be with him. He is socializing better. He is learning better. This is a high IQ kid. He is doing much, much better in all different domains. So I want to, I just want to follow up with a bit of a longer term outcome than the recent case of just putting her child on Adderall and say that we're finding a lot of very good outcomes with these kids. And having followed them now for 10 years, we have data, we're looking at this, but having followed a lot of these kids for 10 years, they're doing very well now over their lifespan.
Kirsten, I want to thank you for calling up.
Thank you.
Hope all goes well.
Can I say one more thing quick?
You have to be quick because we're coming to a break.
Okay. There's a misconception that when you start the medication, you're not doing your behavioral therapy anymore, and that's not true. You absolutely have to do that for the rest of the child's formative years.
Gotcha. Thanks
for
calling.
Bye-bye.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, the conversation about Ritalin, the use of psychostimulants, psychotropic drugs to control the behavior in children. Lots of studies say for the kids who've been taking it, age 6 and over, no problem. The National Institute of Mental Health is currently doing a study, one of a number, as Dr. Willens points out, to look at the risks or the effect of giving these drugs to younger children, to preschool children. We'd like your thoughts on that. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. A conversation about Ritalin, other drugs that are given to control, modify the behavior of children in school, and whether or not they should be used for children even before they go to school. With me on the program today, Dr. Larry Diller. He's a practices behavioral developmental pediatrics in Walnut Creek, California. 2 books, Should I Medicate My Child? Sane Solutions for Troubled Kids with and Without Psychiatric Drugs, and one that's perhaps better known than that, Running on Ritalin. Timothy Willens is with us. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, has a special interest in psychopharmacology, the study of the actions of drugs on the mind, practices in the pediatric and adult clinics at Mass General, has written a book called Straight Talk about psychiatric medications for kids. Dr. Willens, straight talk question. When we were getting ready to do this program, I have to tell you, a number of people here at the radio station were saying, you know, the difference seems to me that to give these kind of drugs to a 3-year-old developing brain as opposed to a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old developing brain, how do you know whether or not that makes a difference? Seems to me a reasonable question.
It's a very reasonable question, and unfortunately we don't have great answers to that. We're certainly watching these kids carefully. Our preliminary read is that there is no long-term effects of these medications. They've been used for 50 years, and we haven't heard of those, but it is something that's under study.
Let's go to Coventry, Rhode Island. Mary's on the line. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And really, the other caller said a lot of what I wanted to say, so I won't repeat that. But this is interesting. We have two boys, and one is 30 years old and one is 17. So obviously you can do the math. We have two generations in the same family. Mm-hmm. They were both diagnosed different times with ADHD at 5 years old. My comment is, and my experience is, that I'm not equating ADD with anything like addiction or alcoholism, but it is a family situation, because with the first child, we were advised by the public school teachers that he really needed a different educational situation, meaning...
This was back in 1977.
Yeah, this is meaning get him out of our classroom, he's taking up too much time, whatever, and get him into private school. Well, that's nice if you can afford it, and we could. So we put him into a situation, shared it with the school, and they did a beautiful job. And we did a great job with behavior and all of that stuff and reading and being very educated.
No drugs in that case, right?
Not in that case until he hit high school. In high school, he was white-knuckling it. He's very bright. He did really well, but the kid was suffering. So we finally just had to succumb and let him take Ritalin. Well, unfortunately, in college, that was his downfall because, you sell it or you crush it and whatever. So it was misused. But while he was on it as a senior, did very, very well, very, very calm, able to concentrate. The second one, who is now 17, was diagnosed at 5, and we did sort of the same thing, only we kept him in public school. And until a teacher really told us that this kid was suffering, and we liked the teacher and respect her, we put him on Ritalin. Well, this kid went flatline. He was a zombie. So we took him off, and he asked to be taken off at 12. He asked us to please try something else. So
what's the lesson, Mary? What's the lesson in your mind if the results are so dramatically different, even in your own family?
Well, this is not a popular thing to say. You know, I'm not that old, so this is not old school, but a lot of it is parents and teachers really just don't have the time. I'm not saying it is parents' fault because it's not our fault. It's actually a brain chemistry. I know that. But a lot of it is taking the time and to listen to your child. We listened to this kid, and we did what he asked. We took him off, and we worked with him. And it worked. Now he's in high school, and he's on Adderall, only because he asked us to help him. He was losing his focus. This is a very bright guy who is going into pre-med, and he's on very low dose of Adderall.
Mary, let me bring the doctors in if I can. I'm interested, Dr. Diller, when you get such mixed results, how do you use those to give any guidance to other people who are looking at situations like Mary's?
You know, I'm thinking back to the 3 to 6 year olds, if I may, for a moment here, because they talked about the dramatic results you sometimes see in a positive way with the medication. And then this lady brings up sometimes negative results. The answer is you have to give it a try, and hopefully somebody who's supportive enough and available enough in terms of a doctor. But I have to tell you, specifically with this 3 to 6 year old category, with proper behavioral treatments, sometimes within weeks, you see this calming. It's as if you gave this kid Ritalin. It's quite remarkable. So, you know, it's not just the pill that works that way. Another pitch here, while I got the mic, is involving fathers from the get-go in terms of evaluation and treatment. I don't know what the listeners think, but involving the fathers can make a huge difference in terms of the success of any treatment program, whether or not it's behavioral or medication.
All right, Mary, thanks for your call to Westford, Massachusetts. Angela, you're on the line. Hi there.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I want to say the most remarkable thing about everything I've been listening to people say is that it's all true. And, you know, you go through so much from the time that you realize that there's something your child needs to the time, you know, I still haven't figured out what my child needs, and he's 9. But I waited until he was 7 or 8 before I decided to put him on medication. And the difference was that at that age, he was able to tell me what he thought about what was happening to him. And he decided after a year of, you know, the sort of frustration that Kristen said her child was going through, that he didn't like feeling jittery. He didn't like breaking down over little things, that he asked me to stop and let's try something else. And then we got his input into modifying his behavior. I don't think a three-year-old can do that.
And what about a parent's ability to just look at the behavior of a child and judge, you know, a comfort level, obedience, all that sort of stuff? That's not good enough, eh?
You know, it's funny. We were pleased with the results we were getting from the medication, and the teachers were pleased. But we needed to go through that second IEP, that second evaluation you get, you know, every 3 years you go through an evaluation, to say, you know, something, we may like his behavior a little bit better, but it's really not helping his schoolwork. So there wasn't any real advantage, and we went back to the, you know, behavior modification, this time with his buy-in, because he knew that the alternative was to go back on the medication, which is definitely what he doesn't want.
Dr. Willens, I'm imagining a three-year-old, you know, a kid who's perhaps still, you know, wearing training pants and wandering down the hall, and how that kid turns around and says to someone like Angela, I don't like these drugs, Ma.
Yeah, it's the whole issue about assessing how the kids like or tolerate the medication is something that we're very sensitive to. And I think that what we're doing often is we do talk to the kids and ask them if they have tummy aches, and you know, you have to developmentally switch a little bit here to be talking to a preschooler. But a lot of times parents are very good gauges of what's going on with their kids. They live with their kids. They know if their kids have fevers before they check their temperature. They know if they have a cold before they have a cold. And we tend to trust parents' behaviors of how their children are eating and sleeping, et cetera. And we think that's a pretty good guide. And as the children get a little bit older, they're very good about telling us things such as, does the medicine taste icky, or does it give them, you know, a headache and things like that. They start to be able to talk and let us know about that. And we rarely medicate. You're not talking about a vast majority of three-year-olds. Most of preschoolers you're talking about are 5 to 6 in that area.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Angela, thanks for that call. We're going to Boston. Natalie's on the line. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I just wanted to add another aspect of this, is that boys and minorities are overly, I guess, prescribed the drugs because there is, as you said before, no medical test, no physical evidence that there is a brain abnormality in ADD and ADHD. And it's subjective from the teacher, maybe, and psychologist who can diagnose this within minutes.
Natalie, I thought that you're right that, yes, it's boys, but that it's also largely middle class and upper class white kids, little boys, who are taking the drug.
Yeah, I also worry, though, inner city, because I guess that's where I have my experience in teaching. And so I just worry about that. And, well, if someone wants to address that. But I also wanted to say, in the United States, it sort of seems to be a phenomenon here, because in Europe, there's a smaller percentage of children who are just drugged, because we are giving them drugs, and even though we have this great war on drugs, and
let's you and I stop, Natalie, and find out if the doctors have got some stats that they work with that we can learn something from. Dr. Diller.
Well, this could be a whole nother program, the social cultural context of ADHD, which is what I go into in great detail in Running on Ritalin, but I don't want to lose the other messages. Real quickly here, the NAACP back in the early 90s was actually against including ADHD as a diagnosis to get services. They were worried exactly what this lady is worried about, that their male youth would be disproportionately diagnosed with this disorder and said to have a brain disorder instead of a lousy home or neighborhood life. However, in reality, African Americans, when controlled for socioeconomic strata, actually are using this medication at one-half to one-quarter the rates that their white counterparts are using. Tim, do you want to say anything about Europe? Go ahead.
Well, no, it turns out that every cross-cultural study that's looked at the rate of ADHD just, you know, indicates that the rate is exactly what we find in the United States. There really is no evidence that this is just an unrealistic expectation of our society that's generating the disorder or anything like that. We're finding it in every other country, and all the other countries now are interested in treating their kids and adults with the condition. In terms of the minority populations, it's very sad to us and our group that we think that they are underrepresented in terms of being identified and treated with the condition. I certainly agree with Larry in terms of we think that there are a lot of kids out there in minority areas that are being misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all with anything, and they could be doing very much, much better if they were properly diagnosed and it was addressed.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. One of the things we haven't talked about, I'd like to hear from both of you on this, is the criticism that is constantly leveled at the pharmaceutical companies for their eagerness to try and market the drugs. And I know that there are cases at either end where the pharmaceutical companies can be sort of patted on the back for not taking advantage of it. And others, I think the advertisers or the people marketing Adderall have been criticized a number of times for saying, you know, here's this apple-cheeked, rosy-faced young boy studying hard, and wouldn't you like to have one just like that? Dr. Diller.
I don't think the pharmaceutical companies created the ADHD Ritalin epidemic, but they've certainly jumped on the bandwagon. And I think these ads trouble me a great deal. Precisely, they show a picture of a smiling child holding a pencil, and his parents are either side beaming. And the headline says, homework is no longer a problem at the Smith family house because they know about ADHD. And my problem with that, it reduces a complex social developmental undertaking, homework, to one thing, the child's brain, to be solved by a pill. And here's the trouble. There are no stock dividends or equity for family therapists or special education teachers.
Tim.
I don't know if you followed all that.
Well, I think that, I think that the idea that we are bringing to the public concerns for destigmatizing disorders, et cetera, and allowing parents who have questions to ring up numbers where they can get information about a disorder, to me, is not problematic. I think sometimes specific medications and without adequate warnings or the side effect profiles of the medicines, I think, can be a problem.
Right.
And I think this is a debate, quite frankly, that's not just parochial to child psychiatry or the use of this medication. It's with virtually everything from hypertension to high cholesterol to erectile dysfunction. So this is a discussion that's occurring in all different aspects of medical treatment.
2004. The results of this study by the National Institute of Mental Health are due out. Will anything in any dramatic way change at that point? We've got about a minute left. Could I get just a quick answer from each of you?
Yeah. My notion here is the pills will be shown to work, okay? There's not going to be big surprises there, maybe with a few more side effects. But the important thing to remember here, even included by the studiers in this case, that even if the pills work, they're not a moral equivalent to helping parents parent better or teachers teach better. And I think the big issue ahead is providing access to those services where it's so much easier to take a pill.
Dr. Willens.
I think that that realizing that pharmacology or using medicines is after you're doing other types of treatment, and context to that, I think this study results will double the number of kids who've been in studies. I think they're going to be helpful to clinicians and parents in terms of understanding better how many kids will respond and better understanding the side effects that these medicines have in this younger age group.
Dr. Willens, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Timothy Willens, psychopharmacologist at Mass General. Dr. Lawrence Diller, thank you.
A website, docdiller.com.
Our website. People always go there for information. Mary Diller is a behavioral pediatrician and the author of Should I Medicate My Child? Thanks to the engineers at the University of California at Berkeley for getting up early to help us with this, George Huga and Jim Hockridge. Connection listeners, please feel free to use our website, the forum page, to continue the conversation. TheConnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is W.